From the Tobacco Road Sports Cafe, we're talking Duke baseball. Welcome to This Week in Duke Baseball with head coach Chris Pollard. Tonight's show is brought to you by Coca-Cola. There's magic when we cheer together. Now, here's your host, the voice of Blue Devil Baseball, Chris Edwards.
Welcome to Tobacco Road Sports Cafe and the latest edition of the Duke Baseball Show. I'm Chris Edwards. Great to be with the head coach of the Blue Devils, Chris Pollard, and great to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. Coach, coming off a 2-1 week, the midweek win over Campbell, then split the doubleheader with Virginia Tech yesterday. Talked about this in the postgame after the doubleheader, faced a couple of really good offenses this past week, and man, I thought you guys pitched it really, really well. How pleased were you with the way your staff commanded the baseball for three games this past week?
Yeah, I think that's what jumps out to me first and foremost. You're playing two offenses that are both top 10 scoring offenses in the country. You know, Campbell came in to Tuesday night as the number one scoring offense in all of college baseball, and I thought we pitched them really well, and we were able to do it in such a way where we didn't have to go into the heart of our bullpen, which allowed us to stay fresh. Now, in hindsight, we didn't need to be fresh because sure. We didn't play on Friday. But you're anticipating a Friday night game, and you want to be in a position to go out and use your best guys out of the pen on Friday night, since, you know, honestly, that's the strength of our team. But some guys stepped up and really gave us quality innings, starting with Andrew Healy. And then you turn around yesterday and you play another team. It was, I don't know, sixth or seventh in the country in scoring coming into the weekend. And so you look back over that three-game stretch, you had a walk rate of 7.9%. You struck out 36%. And you had an OPS against of 671. That's not pitching good. That's pitching great. And, you know, I was really proud of the way that we commanded the ball, our ability to limit free offense, which tells me that we were really good at attacking guys, that we just went at both Campbell and Virginia Tech with our best stuff.
Kind of diving into those numbers, 27 innings of baseball pitched by the staff this week, only 12 free bases allowed, 8 walks, 4 hit-by-pitches. I feel like that's a pretty good number, that if you do that every week, you're going to be in a lot of ball games.
Well, that's exactly what I told our team in the post game yesterday. You know, I said, I told them after the second game, I said, I thought we pitched really well in the second game. I said, I thought we pitched really well all week. Mm-hmm. I said, you know, we ran up against a really good arm in game two, and we couldn't figure him out. You either got a guy like that, you either got to figure him out or you got to wait him out, and we couldn't do either one. You know, you either kind of like go back to Beauvais.
Yeah.
You know, against UNC, very similar type of arm. Which, you know, it's all out there in plain sight. You know, sink or slider guys have been our nemesis, right? We're right-handed sink and slide. We don't handle it well. We've done it well in spurts, but not consistently. You know, go back to Beauvais versus UNC, and we just figured him out. Mm-hmm. You know, and we were able to grind him out there a third time through the order. Sometimes you have to be able to wait guys out. You know, and just kind of stay in the fight until that guy runs out of pitch count. Yesterday in game two, we weren't able to do either one of those things, and all of a sudden you look up and it's the eighth inning, that guy's still on the field. And, you know, credit to him, he's a tough competitor, and he had his best stuff yesterday, and the slider was tunneling really well with his fastball. But all of that said, you know, we certainly pitch well enough to win both ball games.
I want to ask you about a couple of guys. You mentioned Andrew Healy earlier in his start against Campbell. 3 innings, career-high 5 strikeouts, career-high 50 pitches. How big was that, not just for the team aspect, but for Andrew and his growth and development?
Both, right. I mean, from a team standpoint, it set us up not only for the rest of that game, but it really set us up well for the rest of the week. For him, you know, it's just another step in the maturation, the growing process. You know, he stretches out to a career-high pitch count. You know, he's able to hopefully build off of that tomorrow when he takes the baseball again. And, you know, maybe you can envision him stretching it out to 60, 65 pitches. And, you know, we stretch him out a little bit at a time each week. All of a sudden you look up, and that's a really valuable guy to have down the stretch.
You had 18 innings of baseball to cover. Excuse me, yesterday, Alex Gow takes the ball to start game one. 5 innings, yeah. No hits, no runs, 3 walks, 7 strikeouts, 80 pitches. Man, a lot to like from that outing yesterday.
Oh, my goodness. He went out, you know, you get a doubleheader, like you see, at 18 innings to cover. You need that guy who's taking the ball in game one to give you a good start. And not only did he cover 5 innings, He did it. I mean, we couldn't have scripted it any better. He went two times through the lineup, and that's our goal. You know, we want Alex to give us twice through the lineup, and then when that lineup turns over again, be able to hand the ball off to someone else. But to be efficient enough to squeeze five innings out of two times through the lineup, that just set us up great for the rest of that ball game. And then our bullpen came in and threw really well behind him.
Yeah, I'm learning out of things to say about Fran O'Shea and how electric and how good he's been in his role at the back end of the ball game.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, he's doing so many things well. Number one, he's commanding the breaking ball at about 70% mm-hmm. for strikes. And so you can't key off of the fastball. You can't pigeonhole him and just say, I'm going to sell out to fastball. I'm going to cheat. We call it cheating. I'm going to cheat to get on time with it, because he throws his breaking stuff for strikes so well. You just can't do that. But yesterday it was, you know, again, it was up to 97 miles an hour. It was 20 inches of IVB or vertical ride on the fastball, and it's about 7 inches of extension. And those are three outlier metrics. Those are three metrics that are way off the scale. You know, 97's off the scale. 20 inches of induced vertical breaks off the scale. Seven feet of extension is, you know. So when you combine all three of those, you know, much like James Talon, you have a guy that can throw a fastball and tell you it's coming, and you're still going to really have a really hard time handling it. That's what James Talon does so well with, you know, with his fastball. It's an outlier pitch. It's an outlier metric, and you know everybody in the ballpark can know it's coming. It's hard to hit, and man, when you got that, you know you got something.
Yeah, those two guys with their outlier fastballs pitched back to back yesterday in Game One. Talon commanded the ninth inning, I thought. But how much does Talon's outlier fastball complement O'Shea's outlier fastball?
Well, it's a great question, because they do. You know, they both beat you above the barrel. You know, they're both above the barrel fastballs, but they do it in different ways and different sight lines. So, you know, whereas you got one coming, you know, from way over the top at 6-7 feet, you know, and then Talon's got a much different angle release height, and it's almost a pitch that goes uphill as it's coming to the plate. And so, you know, that you make a good point, is that they do complement each other well.
I want to ask about a couple of other guys from a pitching standpoint. Jason White and Ryan Higgins in their outings yesterday. What did you think of the way they threw the baseball?
Yeah, they threw great. I mean, you know, Jason had that quick inning, got us some momentum. We didn't use it, but he gave us an opportunity to use it. I thought he did a great job minimizing there in the first. You know, you've got one run in, you got first and third, one out, and he keeps the scoreboard from having a crooked number, which I thought was big, you know. And then the error loomed large there in the third. That was a big moment in the game, because you got two quick outs, nobody on, you got a chance to get off the field 1-2-3 right there, and we make a mistake, and they made us pay for it, and you know that kind of put us playing uphill the rest of the ball game. But that still, even that said, I thought Higgins threw the ball really well yesterday.
What about yesterday, the outing by Ed Hart, coming in, picking up a teammate? We talk about that a lot the time we've been together. I thought he came in and got off the field there in the top of the ninth and gave you some momentum, a chance to put over some runs on the board in the bottom half.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're at the top of their lineup, yeah. You know, and you're still within striking distance right there. Mm-hmm. You know they're going to the bullpen finally, and their bullpen's been a weakness for them. And, you know, you got to keep it right there, where at four runs, one swing of the bat can get you back in the game and can get you at extra innings. And, you know, he comes in and faces, you know, comes in a tough spot, mm-hmm. but still is able to get us off the field with no damage. And, you know, we intentionally walk Cannizzaro to get to a first rounder. I mean, a guy that everybody thinks is going to go in the first half of the first round. And, you know, and that says something about Ed Hart's stuff, that we felt like he matched up well, you know, with Hurley, because that's a guy that came into this weekend maybe as hot as anybody in the country.
I want to ask you about your defense for a couple of seconds. We talked about a couple of errors yesterday, but I thought there were some plays this past weekend and this past week in general that were executed at a really high level. Overall, I feel like your defense is playing at a pretty high level.
Yeah, you know, and you know, we're going to live with the occasional physical error. I mean, sure. That's the nature of our sport. But I still thought we did some things really well. We turned a double play. I thought Jay Bashir's was really good turning a double play. I thought, you know, Fisher was really good at starting the double play. I mean, you know, the double play starts with a great front side feed. And you know, he gave him balls right in the chest that he could handle. And, you know, the play by Alex Mooney in the 5-6 hole, a diving play, and get up and make that throw against a one runner. You know, I thought we did some things really well. To your point, Alex Stone was terrific behind the plate, you know, both games, and continue to shut down the running game. You know, teams are 19 out of 28 for the year on us, and that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, Campbell came into the game on Tuesday, 71 for 82 in stolen bases, and they didn't attempt at a single
stolen. Didn't make an attempt.
No.
They really – I mean, we shut them down from the get-go, and And some of that's reputation, you know. I mean, some of that you over the course of a season, you develop a reputation as, are you a team that teams can run on, or are you a team that's hard to run on? And certainly, you know, teams got to look at the numbers when they play us and say, this is going to be a tough team to run on. That's part of it. But another part of it, you know, when they finally got a base runner on Tuesday, Andrew Healy did a terrific job at executing timing pick to second base. And one of the things that makes Campbell a really good running offense is they're very good at stealing third base. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't just look to take second, they look to take third. And so we had talked about the importance of executing timing pick early in the ball game. That's a kind of a message. Hey, you know what, if you want to do the vault, if you want to cheat, you know, which is what a vault is, you're basically cheating with a hop step to run, then we're going to run a timing pick and you're going to have a hard time. And to do that, you got to execute it. And I thought, you know, that's a really good job by a freshman there in the third inning. He's got things rolling. The guy finally gets to second base, and he executes a really well-run timing pick. And that helped us shut them down the rest of the game.
I was thinking about this driving home from the ballpark last night. The versatility of this club positionally. You got a guy like MJ Metz that can come off the bench, play first, play third. You put Storm in the outfield yesterday. How much of a luxury is that as a coach to have guys that you can move around and know that they're not going to be a liability defensively?
Well, you know, it starts with Luke Storm and his versatility. His versatility allows us to be able to do that. And a guy that's an unsung versatile defensive player. You mentioned MJ. MJ's a terrific defender, a really, really terrific defender. But another guy that we should talk about when it comes to versatility is Cole Hebel, because his ability to come off the bench and make plays late in ball games, and it's going to go a little bit unnoticed, but it didn't go unnoticed by our staff or our team yesterday. The play he made to start the ninth inning was an extremely difficult play. And, you know, you take that play for granted, but all of a sudden, if that ball drops, that runner's at second base, the tying runs at the plate, and that inning feels very different.
I want to ask you a couple questions that we got through email from our pal Joe Holt. Wants to know, what is the instrument worn at the belt level by the infield and outfield players?
Yeah, so we use a system called Game Day Signals to call both our offensive and defensive signs. So all of our pitch calls for what the pitcher's going to throw, the next pitch that the pitcher's going to throw, our defensive plays. Mm-hmm. So if you think about a first and third play or a bunt defense, we run through those signals as well. And then we run all of our offensive looks. Every play that we run offensively, we'll run through it. So basically the player is able to look down and see either a 1, 2, or 3-digit number and know that that corresponds to either a pitch, a defensive play, or an offensive play. It allows us to get those plays in very quickly, which is important with the new pace of play rules, but it also allows for us to do it in such a way where it's really not traceable by our opponent. Our, you know, opponent can't watch me touch, you know, different parts of my body to put a sign on and know, okay, well, they're running their regular bunt defense, or they're running their first and third play. You know, it's you can only mask those things so many different ways, but now with this system, we don't have to do that. And you know, more and more, you're seeing it across all levels of baseball. But we don't have to give up. Our catchers don't give a sign to the pitcher. Everybody on the field looks and gets the sign from the bench at the same time, so there's no reason for a signal from the catcher to the pitcher.
Joe has a follow-up question. He knows that the instruments worn by the pitcher and catcher convey the next pitch, but does it have the possibility of low, outside corner, inside corner, that such a thing?
Yes, we call location with it as well. So that's, you know, there are multiple numbers there, and so we can call pitch, we can call location, we can call pick. You know, we call different tempos that guys work out of. You see Jason White, who really mixes up his tempos. We can call that from the bench. And then, you know, this may be part of the question. It's still legal for the catcher to wear the earpiece. Mm-hmm. And so there can still be actual verbal communication from the bench to the catcher. That's one-way communication. So there's no way for Alex to communicate back through that system to us, but he has an earpiece in, and so we can give a little bit of extra information to Alex, maybe on what we want to do with a particular pitch, or, hey, slow it down right here, or, hey, go talk to him and buy a little bit of time for our relief pitcher in the bullpen. It just gives us an opportunity to communicate important one-off, I would call them one-off messages from the bench to the field.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back and have more with Coach after this from Tobacco Road Sports Cafe on the Blue Devil Sports Network from Learfield.
And we're back with breaking news. Coke Zero Sugar might be the best Coke ever.
That's right, Jim. Coke Zero Sugar is a must-try for any Coke fan, so make sure you... Jim. Jim. We're on the air.
Ooh, yes, this tastes like the best Coke ever to me. Your thoughts, Jen?
Well, can I have a sip?
Jen, we're in the middle of reporting the news.
I need to try it first.
Let me grab my car keys and we'll roll.
We still going to that new bar downtown?
Yeah, supposed to be fun. Lexi, give me driving directions from home to downtown bar district.
Autocorrect. Suggest Uber. Pick up. Home. Drop off downtown bar district.
No, I'm driving.
Suggest the Metro bus. Departing in 12 minutes.
Point taken, Lexi. We'll grab a ride.
If you drink, don't drive. Decide to ride. Brought to you in partnership by Anheuser-Busch, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, and Uber.
Everyone has an idea of their perfect engagement ring. You'll know it when you see it, but you have to see it. Allura Bridal from Reed's Jewelers. 8 stunning collections with over 300 styles. Yellow, rose, or white gold. Two-tone, stacks, pavé, solitaires, wraps, guards. Your perfect ring exists. All you have to do is come and see it. It's your style and your choice with Allura Bridal. Only at Reed's Jewelers and Reed's.com.
I feel happy, Valero Pay Plus app.
I feel happy, it makes savings a snap.
Use it and start saving automatically.
You just save some money, none too shabby.
I feel happy, I'm in and out real fast.
I feel happy, now pit stops are a blast.
Download today and get in on the fun.
Valero Pay Plus app, your savings have begun.
Back at Tobacco Road Sports Cafe, continuing on with the head coach of the Blue Devils, Chris Pollard, on this Monday afternoon. Coach, let's talk offense a little bit. I thought on Tuesday you faced some really good arms against Campbell, and we talked about how good their arms were on Tuesday. Cummings, you got to him, and Lloyd, their starter, was really good. Nice to throw that big haymaker there against Cummings in the early innings.
Yeah, that was a big moment in the ball game. You know, I'm like you. I thought we had a great offensive approach against a really good midweek arm. I mean, Lloyd is a fifth-year senior with ACC stuff. You know, looking back at the TrackMan CSV file, the thing that jumps out to me, I'm like, why did this guy not get drafted last year? You know,
yeah.
But he's had a really good year so far for Campbell, throwing on Tuesdays. Tells you how good of a team they are that they can run that, a fifth-year senior out there on Tuesdays that's got that kind of stuff. But I thought we had a great offensive approach against him. But to your point, the way that we handled Cumming was big, because they brought who is their, you know, de facto closer, but he can extend out in games. You know, one of the best back end guys right now in college baseball. They brought him in right there in that moment to say, look, if we can hold it right here, we got enough confidence in our offense that we'll ride this guy and see if we can hit our way back into this ball game. And then all of a sudden we didn't let him do that, because we ambushed Cumming with two doubles and put the game sort of far enough out of reach that they didn't want to burn coming. I mean, when you've got him in the ball game at that point, what you're basically saying is, hey, this game is more important to us than our Friday night game, mm-hmm. because we're gonna run this guy out there and see if we can battle our way back in this game, even if it means he's burned for Friday night. Once we were able to get those two doubles and create that additional separation, they basically cut their losses and said, okay, hey, let's pull Cumming out of this game and make sure he's available for Friday night. And that allowed us to kind of keep pouring it on him a little bit, which allowed us to have some separation to keep our bullpen preserved.
Well, let me ask you about the first game yesterday against Griffin Green, heavy sinker guy. How about the approach that you had against Green in game one of that doubleheader?
I thought we had a good approach. I told you that after mm-hmm. the game yesterday. I thought, our approach was better than the final score would indicate. You know, I thought that, you know, we get the three runs there in the second, but then we had him on the ropes with runners in scoring position three other times after that and hit balls right on the screws, mm-hmm. you know. And so we took good swings. We hit some balls right into the teeth of the wind and didn't have anything to show for it, but they were good swings. And so, you know, you live with that. I mean, we loaded the bases. Now, it's Weicker, not Green, but we load the bases there in the seventh, and Stone hits a ball right on the nose. It just hit it right at the second baseman. But if the second baseman's one step in either direction, all of a sudden that could be – it's at least two runs, maybe three runs accounted for across the plate. So, you know, I said at the end, we run that ball game 3-1, and we played a clean game to do it, and we really limited a good offense. But that game could have just as easily been 6-7-1.
Well, even as good as Hackenberg was in game two yesterday, I never felt like the team was out of it. Maybe that's a byproduct of how good this team has been offensively all year long.
Well, I think it's a byproduct of how good we've been offensively, but I think it's also a byproduct of how good we've been over the second half of games offensively and how good we've been at sort of holding teams in check with our bullpen. That gives you a lot of confidence that, hey, we're going to get back in this thing. And I felt like if we could have gotten him out of there two innings earlier, we'd win the ball game. You know, we got to Kirtner pretty quickly. And listen, I mean, you know, Storm missed a home run there. We got one run there in the eighth, but we were about 2 feet away from having three runs there in the eighth. And then all of a sudden, it's 5-3 going into the bottom of the ninth instead of 5-1 going into the bottom of the ninth. And all of a sudden, if we get to Kirtner the way we did, they may tighten up, and all of a sudden, you know, we can go for the jugular, so to speak. But you know, I thought we did some things well, but we just couldn't string enough together against a guy that was really locked in.
Individually from this past week, who jumps out to you offensively about the way they performed?
Well, I thought that, you know, Mooney had great at-bats, really grinded it out at-bats, had some, you know, obviously the two-out hit yesterday in the second, but also just really was, you know, spoiled a lot of pitches with a great two-strike approach and would spoil, and then – you know, would spit on a really tough pitch and get to first base. He just really did a great job of extending some innings with that approach, and so I thought his at-bats were really good.
A couple of things to talk about from yesterday. Before the game, one of the doubleheader, and a Callahan from Duke Women's lacrosse. Great first pitch that she threw out in support of Morgan's message. Just a lot of good things going on all the way around there.
Yeah, no, it was awesome to have Anna out, and grateful for her leadership with Morgan's message, and we're – you know, we were excited to be able to partner with Morgan's message now for the second year in a row to bring awareness around mental health in athletes and get away from the stigma that's sometimes associated with mental health in athletes. And I think it's a great program. It's an expanding program. You know, I had the good fortune to be able to go over back in November and speak to the Morgan's Message group at Voyager Academy, and our good friend and former Duke baseball great David Norman. His daughter is heading up the Morgan's Message chapter there at Voyager Academy, and it's just, I bring that up because it's just really cool to see that grow.
Let me ask you about a couple of former Blue Devils that did some great things in professional baseball this week. I don't know if you saw it. Marcus Johnson, first career outing, 4 innings, 2 hits, no walks, and 5 strikeouts. That was phenomenal for Marcus. Billy Seidel, Jack Carey, each had saves in their first outings of the season. Graham Pauly threw yesterday 4 for his first 9 at A-ball in Lakeshore.
Yeah, I had a chance to trade text messages with Marcus over the weekend. I was really excited to see his start and see Graham get out of the gate good. I need to text Jack and Billy. And, you know, the other one, Jimmy Herron had a four-hit night in AAA just a couple of nights ago. And that young man's knocking on the door. He's making, as is Mervis.
Yeah.
Both those guys are making it really hard on their organizations. You know, Matt's tearing up AAA baseball again with the Iowa Cubs. And, you know, just a matter of time. And, you know, it's pretty special to think that you may have 3 guys off of that 2018 team that are in the big leagues by the end of this year. You know, certainly Matt's got a great opportunity to be up with the Cubs in short order. I think just as soon as that he gets past that service time threshold, I think that's the only thing that's keeping him out of the big leagues right now. But then you look at, you know, what Jimmy Herron's doing in AAA, and I had a chance to talk with a representative from the Rockies just late last week, talked about just how excited they were about the way he's playing and how much of a gamer he is and a competitor. And then Bryce Jarvis, you know, is pitching really well and, you know, just a matter of time. And so, man, what cool to think about this coming August and potentially all 3 of those guys being in the big leagues, along with those other guys that you mentioned that are climbing the ladder.
Let's talk about this week for your ball club this year. Got Davidson coming to Coombs tomorrow. Then we ship up to Boston this weekend to take on a really good BC team for 3 games. Can you give us a preview of the week to come?
Yeah, you know, we're getting Davidson really as they've started to figure things out. They've played exceptionally well since they've gotten into A-10 play. You know, they were scuffing a little bit early, and you just knew because they had so many guys back off of that. They had a 44-win team last year, and they had a bunch of guys back off that team, so you knew it was a matter of time. And, you know, they're 5-1 to start play in the A-10, and you know, Wilson is a guy that's swinging a really hot bat for them with 14 home runs. They've got a lockdown guy at the back end of the bullpen. And then you go to play Boston College this weekend, who most people would say is the biggest surprise in college baseball. You know, they're number 4 in the RPI. And what I think makes their team so impressive, you know, this is a team that didn't pitch well at all last year en route to a 5-25 season in the ACC. And they have been off the charts on the bump, and they're really good in the bullpen. And so, you know, you got to kind of get to them early. And they've got 3 guys in Honeyman and Leary and Ventrano in the middle of their lineup that are all going to be high draft picks. I mean, Honeyman, everybody says, could be a first rounder, and Ventrano and Leary are guys who are going to top 5 rounds. So there's some real thump in the middle of that lineup as well. So another challenging week for our team. You know, we've been up to the task to this point. It doesn't get any easier. You know, this past week you play 2 teams that are both top 35 teams in the RPI. You know, now you got to turn around and play 2 more really quality opponents, and one of them on the road. And that's just, you've heard me say it before, Chris, and you and I've talked about this for over a decade. That's what you sign up for. Mm-hmm. That's life in the ACC. You don't get any weeks where you can kind of catch your breath. If you do get knocked to the mat, you better be good at getting off the mat quickly.
Can you recall a time in your college coaching career where you had back-to-back days off for a weekend series because the weather was that bad?
I'm sure we had more of that in my 8 years at Appalachian. I don't remember a time playing at home at Duke where we've dealt with 2 days like that. I mean, you know, Chris, think of all the stuff we've done over the years. We've shoveled snow and squeegeed water off of fields. There was it just wouldn't relent on Friday and Saturday. I mean, it rained and rained and rained and rained, and you know, it just sometimes Mother Nature wins, and you know, she won Friday and Saturday, and it's just, you sometimes you just you got to say, hey, you can't play baseball in this. Yeah. You know, I mean, you can want to all you want to, but if it's raining the way it was on Friday and Saturday, you just cut your losses and try to be ready when it stops. Fortunately for us, we got a beautiful day to play yesterday, and we're able to get two ball games in, and so, you know what, it is what it is, as the old expression goes.
What'd you do with your 2 days off? Anything
well,
fun?
We sat around the office and watched it rain. I mean, you try to watch a little bit more synergy and True Media on guys. You check the radar 1,000 times. You walk outside and look up at the sky and see if there's something you're missing on radar. I mean, even Friday and Saturday night, Chris, I'd go outside about every 20 minutes and just say, okay, is this like I want to make sure we're not missing anything here. You know, because it's easy to second guess yourself, but we didn't on this one. I mean, it just, it kept coming, but, you know, we just tried to use that time to be a little bit more prepared. We did get two practices in, you know, I mean, we were able to, thanks to Matt Hess and the hospitality and Greg Pierce for facilitating, but we were able to get both teams through, Pascal, both Friday and Saturday for workouts. And, you know, and not only is that important, you know, just for readiness, but it's also important for health. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you don't want pitchers to take 2 days off, not have a baseball in their hand, and then stick them out there, you know, in a competitive environment, because that's you all of a sudden put guys in a more compromised position as far as the potential for injury. So it was good to be able to get that work in.
Well, the weather looks great for tomorrow and the rest of the week, and we look forward to seeing you tomorrow before the ball game against Davidson at Coombs.
Yeah, we got a great weather day tomorrow, and the weather looks great in Boston, so we won't have to worry about it. And the great thing is, if the weather does take a turn for the worse up there, it's their problem to worry about, not ours.
That's exactly right. That's the head coach of the Blue Devils, Chris Pollard. Thanks for joining us on this Monday from Tobacco Road Sports Cafe for the Duke Baseball Show.
You've been listening to This Week in Duke Baseball with Blue Devils head coach Chris Pollard. Tonight's show was brought to you by Coca-Cola. There's magic when we cheer together. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation of the Blue Devils Sports Network.